Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Hello, this is Stephen O'Doherty. What is workplace bullying? Bullying takes so many forms: threats, harassment, belittling, frequent outbursts of yelling, threats of physical and emotional violence. The toll of bullying, whether it be in workplaces, schools, or even families, is dreadful, robbing people of the ability to be themselves and succeed. If there's bullying in an organisation, it's usually the case that there's a culture that's allowed that to grow, and that culture often starts from the top. Well, it doesn't need to be that way. Peacewise is an organisation that teaches how to instill a culture of peace in organisations. Bruce Burgess of Peacewise joined us for a very practical discussion about workplace bullying and what to do about it.
Well, culture really is something that's driven from the leader, from the top. And so what a leader models, what they reward, what they allow, what they support, that sets the tone of how we do things around here. And so that's how people get their cues for what's okay and what's not. And then everyone else takes the lead from that.
Very often you'll find organisations will try to measure culture in a certain way, or they'll measure outputs and other things to do with the bits and pieces around culture. But I don't know that you can actually measure culture itself, can you?
Well, I think that what organisations are used to doing is setting some performance criteria that they expect of their employees. They want this project done, they want these targets met, they want this revenue raise, that sort of thing. But actually, when it comes to behaviour, that's a more elusive thing, and organisations are not so good at setting expectations of what behaviour will be. They might have a value statement or that sort of thing,
yes.
But when it comes to actually evidencing to their staff, this is the behaviours that we want, this is the behaviours that we value, and you'll even be rewarded if you demonstrate those, organisations not so good at that.
Well, let's say you have a value statement. A lot of organisations do now, faith-based and otherwise. You walk in and there it is on their, you know, shiny, in their shiny foyer. We value this and that, and customers always come first or whatever it is. But you can't just make a statement up out of nowhere, or worse still, get some consultant to write it and stick it on the wall. You've got to live it out.
Yeah, absolutely do, because the only thing worse than having no value statement is having one that you don't live out. And especially, you know, I mean, we've worked with numbers of organisations that have had statements about the kind of organisation that they are, relational, respectful, integrity, these sorts of things, but then we're there dealing with situations where those things haven't happened.
So what's gone wrong in that case, Bruce?
Well, I think a number of things can have gone wrong. One is that the statements are aspirational, but they're not actually lived by the leaders of the organisation. So that's one thing. A second thing is people need help when they're dealing with difficult situations. So, for example, let's take conflict or different personalities or mismatched expectations, that sort of thing. Unless people have some help in how to deal with having a difficult conversation, how to actually deal with graciously with a tough person who might have a spiky sort of character, unless they get help with those things, then, you know, we go to our default responses, which are either typically escape responses or attack responses, and those things don't lead to healthy relationships. We need to actually have some skills in dealing with challenging relationships, peacemaking, where I mean, and so some training in help in that kind of environment can make a big difference. And also, we come back to this whole area of rewards. You know, if an organisation says, "Well, we have these values," but actually the true lived values are, "Well, we expect you to work ridiculous overtime. We expect you to put your workplace in front of your family. Mm. We have a macho culture. Bullying's okay." Mm. These sorts of things. Well, then it doesn't matter what you've got on the wall. The reality is you're creating a culture that's toxic.
Well, it's very interesting. I did read an article recently about a number of franchisees from a large food chain that had their franchises taken away by the parent company. Because of this very issue, workplace bullying allegations. And a comment by one of the employees was, "It's great that X has been removed, but X, being the leader, X's attitudes have spread throughout the middle management, and we don't know whether anything will change." That's an example of what you're saying, isn't it?
It is, because, you know, the seeds of that tone, the seeds of that mindset have now been sown into a large number of people of influence. Because, of course, you know, it's not only the leader, but the leader then will influence those people who are making the key decisions and who are responsible for managing other people. And so that then seeps through the organization. But it can work the other way as well. Inspiring, respectful, loving, gracious, caring leaders who reward people not only financially, but with praise and maybe flexibility in their working arrangements, those sorts of things, that will filter through an organisation too.
Well, you're listening to Open House. We're speaking with Bruce Burgess. He's the head of Peacewise, an organisation that teaches organisations a culture that leads to peace rather than one that fosters bullying. And if you'd like to talk to us about your workplace issues tonight, 1-300-40-2020, if you want to comment on the story of workplace bullying, the issue of workplace bullying. We're speaking about the leader and the culture of the leader. But now, a culture can't be something that you just put on like a cloak when you go to work. You've got to embrace something personally. So doesn't culture actually go to the character of the person involved?
Yeah, it certainly does. And, you know, this is where I guess, you know, what that person's own spirituality is significant. You know, does the person actually have a view of people that reflects, I guess, God's view of people and relationships? Jesus, in Luke chapter 6, talks about treating others the way you would like them to treat you, and that's called the golden rule. Mm. And that is actually a whole, if you like, way of living that informs everything that a person who follows that rule does. So when a leader is trying to breed a culture that says, we want everyone in this organization to be treating each other in a way that is loving and kind and respectful because that's just the way you'd like to be treated, then you're actually living out something that comes from deep within and impacts others in a positive and helpful way.
Yeah, this comes from a place that says everyone was made in the image of God, therefore all are equally valuable.
Yeah.
And also that Jesus died for everybody, therefore all are equally valued enough by God that his own son died for them. Mm. Who are you to come into a workplace and start to throw your weight around? So how do you exercise reasonable authority? If you are the leader of an organisation, sometimes you actually do have to call it. You do have to say, this is the way we'll do things here. This is our policy. Can you still do that and regard that person as an equal before God?
You can. I mean, being an equal before God doesn't mean that people in an organisation have exactly the same roles or responsibilities or authority. What it means, though, is that in the way that communication takes place, it will be respectful. It will be principled, it will be kind, and, you know, if someone is needing to be called to account, that will be done in a way that doesn't belittle the person. For example, you don't do that by publicly criticizing the person in front of their peers. You would have a private conversation.
Yes.
You would follow a good process. And you would also potentially seek to be redemptive in the way that you approach that. So I know of a situation where a boss was given the opportunity by the CEO to fire someone because they had developed a real problem with alcohol. And the way the boss took that situation under their wing was they thought, well, I can get rid of this person immediately or I can actually try and help them. And so they actually said, look, we realize you have an issue with alcohol. Would you like help?
Yes.
And they were able to actually restore that person to being a healthy worker, whilst at the same time making them accountable for behaviour that wasn't acceptable. But it was done in a kind way, trying to actually restore them rather than just throw them to the cleaners.
Yeah, and being redemptive, a key Christian ideal that comes to us from Jesus' own work on the cross. Bruce, Jesus, of course, did say, love your neighbour. He also said, love your enemy. Now, and he also said that we couldn't approach the cross without understanding our own need for forgiveness and being able to forgive others. So what about forgiveness in an organisation?
Yeah, fantastic question. Both forgiveness and asking for forgiveness, so confession, if you like, asking for forgiveness, are not things that typically appear in many organisations.
It's not in the leadership handbook that you'll get
it's not in
on
the leadership
Amazon,
handbook.
Probably.
And yet, I would say that is actually a fundamental characteristic of a good leader, to be able to honestly and sincerely say, I am so sorry for this way that I let you down. Will you please forgive me?
Now, I know that you teach people forgiveness. Let's just go into this in a little bit more depth. There's a way of apologizing to someone which is like, well, I'm sorry you were hurt.
Yeah. I'm sorry if I did anything wrong, but actually it was your fault.
That's it. What's the proper way to ask for forgiveness?
Yeah, sure. Well, we have a detailed explanation of this on our website, but let me just go through it quickly. We have a framework which we call the 7 A's of confession, and it starts with addressing everyone involved. So if you've actually criticised someone in front of a bunch of people, well, you'll apologise to the bunch of them, not just the person that you've criticised.
Right.
Next, avoid if, but, and maybe. So these are apology killers. You know, as soon as you say an if or a but or a maybe, you're actually starting to explain why you did what you did and justify it, and you kill the apology stone dead.
Yes.
Third, admit specifically. So that means don't beat around the bush and say, well, for whatever I did that was wrong, I'm sorry, because it means you can't actually do that. You don't even give the person the comfort of knowing that you realize what it is that you did wrong.
Mm.
Fourth, acknowledge the hurt. So a lot of times when we do things wrong, it might be unintentional, but that doesn't mean a person isn't hurt by it. So, Stephen, I'm so sorry that when I forgot we were doing this interview, that left you with a big gap in your program and you've got nothing to share with the listeners. I mean, I'm being flippant. But you're
entering my space and saying you understand the effect that the transgression had on me.
Yeah, and often...
By the way, don't do it again, Bruce.
Yeah, I won't. I'll try not to, Stephen. Next, accept the consequences. I mean, if we've let someone down relationally, one of the consequences might be they will be reluctant to trust us for a while. Of course, when we give a good apology, there's a greater likelihood that they will trust us. Altering our behaviour is the sixth A, and so that is committing to change. We can't give an ironclad guarantee that we'll never stuff up again, but what we can say is, I am going to do everything in my power not to do this again. And then the last A is ask for forgiveness. So having given my good apology, then opening up the possibility of actually restoring the relationship by saying, will you please forgive me? And if it's a big thing, it might be that they need time to do that. You know, I hope in time you will be able to forgive me. So that's sort of an apology. It's not a formula. It's just things that we've found over the years make a big difference, is if you give a really good apology, people will typically be much more forgiving because they see the sincerity and the recognition of what that you've done something wrong and you're trying to restore the relationship. And, you know, we talked a little bit about Jesus as a model. We would actually say that in terms of strong leadership, having that servant leadership which is willing to admit fault when fault is done is actually a strength and a sign of strong leadership, and people will follow you because people don't expect perfect leaders, but they want leaders of integrity and authenticity and humility. And then obviously the flip side of that is being willing to forgive.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
Not harbouring grudges. I have used your not formula, but I took to heart what you said about asking for forgiveness and the way in which to apologise, and I've applied it in my professional life, and it was profound. The impact was absolutely profound, both on the person concerned and on myself. So I thoroughly commend you for what you're doing, and I wish that more people would undertake your training. We'd have better workplaces if they did.
Thanks, Stephen.
You've got a couple of resources you've referred to. Now, firstly, you've got a website.
Yeah, we do, peacewise.org.au, and that has details of our training, including training coming up on the 19th and 20th of June that we'd really encourage people to do if they want to learn how to deal with conflict better and difficult situations, really life-changing training.
All right, so again, the details are on your website, peacewise.org.au.
Mm-hmm.
And you were chatting off-air with me about a book that you've recently read?
Yes, it's called The Choice, which has a subtitle, The Christ-Centered Pursuit of Kingdom Outcomes by Gary Hogue and Scott Rodin. This is a profound book because it talks about the question of what is success in Christian ministry and challenges Christian ministries to think about are we defining success, even unconsciously, by worldly measures, secular measures? This is a profoundly challenging book because it looks at the sorts of things that we've been talking about as well, but the fabric of relationships within the organization as being a really important thing in God's eyes as to whether that's a successful ministry or not. I mean, if you are hitting all your targets, but the culture is toxic in order to do it, then that is not a successful ministry or organization.
No, and you shouldn't have to employ ungodly means to achieve godly ends. That would be
correct.
Completely the opposite of what God wants.
Yeah, so it's not a long book, but it's a profound and highly challenging book, which we as a ministry have really found significant, and I'd encourage people to read it.
Well, it's great to know you. You're a good friend, and the ministry you run is an important one. It's called Peacewise. And Bruce Burgess, thank you for joining us on Open House.
Absolute pleasure, Stephen.